Haven't done Joshua, according to my records. And let's go ahead and pray. Lord, I do ask you to help us to understand your words. Help us to be good students of your words as we continue to go verse by verse and how we continue to understand your words. Help us to be faithful to them. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, spiritually speaking, the first five books will be the law. Okay? And so when you read the law, you discover, man, I can't keep that. And so what's the solution? In Galatians, it says the law is our schoolmaster to bring us to Christ. So the first five books is the law, and the sixth one is Joshua. Joshua is the Hebrew Old Testament. So from Hebrew to English, it's spelled Joshua. From Greek to English, it's spelled J-E-S-U-S. So it's a picture. We can't keep the law. So the solution is Joshua. Moses and the law couldn't bring him into the land of Canaan, into the rest, but who does? Joshua. Okay, so there's Jesus. Okay, and so evidence of that for us, okay, it's Joshua's the first book in a series of 12 historical books. And this is what makes the Bible unique, is that it is not a book on religion. It is a book about history. Happens to mention one religion, Judaism, in the Old Testament. In the New Testament, it's a faith of Christ, commonly known as what we call Christianity. And so what makes the Bible a history book, the only accurate history book, because when you and I read history books, they are based on hearsay. And the way you could try to learn history is to try to find books or statements said by the men. Back in those days, you get closer to the truth than the history books. The history books demonize who the author doesn't like and glorifies who the author likes. You can still learn from it, but you got to kind of take it with a grain of salt. Okay? And so all history books are based on hearsay. And usually history is lies agreed upon by the ones who write the books. Usually that's what history's about. Okay? And so the Bible is the only true history book, and of course the Lord is writing through man, so it's history that we can understand, and that's what makes the Bible unique, is it's a book of records, okay, a book of records of history. And so it has 24 chapters, Joshua, 658 verses. Oh, I'm going to take you to two places to give you that idea of Jesus and Joshua. Okay, sometimes in the New Testament, the word, the name will be spelled different. Like in the Old Testament, Elijah. In the New Testament, you'll see it Elias, E-L-I-A-S. And that's because of the language. Now, David, Old Testament, is David in the New Testament. Noah in the Old Testament, N-O-A-H, is Noe in the New Testament, N-O-E. Joshua, Old Testament, Jesus, New Testament. Okay, if you would, take a look at Acts 7. And we'll lay a little foundation here about Joshua. Joshua was a military man. He was trained by Moses, who was a military man. Moses would have had the education of West Point because he was, you know, under the Pharaoh. So he would have had him the greatest military. And he understood military tactics. He knew how to kill a man about 10 different ways, as they teach him in military. Okay, so Moses knew those things, and then he taught those ideas to Joshua. And then, of course, Joshua listened to the captain of his salvation, okay, who gave him some military tactics were quite unusual, but they worked. Okay, in Acts 7, sometimes if you go to stores, Christian bookstores, or maybe a secondhand store, you might be able to find Bibles in there. If you look at the title page, it might say King James, but sometimes they're not King James because the publishers are not real trustworthy. like Thomas Nelson Publishers. They owned the right. Thomas Nelson, through the years, owned the rights to the American Standard Version. It went bankrupt. They tried to revise Standard. It went bankrupt. Now they're the owners of the copyright of the New King James. And at the same time, they own the copyright to Anton LaVey's Satanic Bible. No, I'm sorry, that's Zondervan. Zondervan owns the copyrights of the ESV and Anton LaVey's Satanic Bible. So sometimes you'll find some of these guys will put King James on the title page, but they won't be King James. And the verse I look at first off to verify is in Acts 7:45. This is Stephen running down through the history of Israel. Okay, and this will be the last opportunity for the Jews to receive their Messiah. Okay, as far as Jews in Jerusalem. So he's coming down through this history lesson of Israel. And in Acts 7:45, which also our fathers, okay, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, that came after brought in with Jesus into the possession of the Gentiles. So in the land of Canaan, who brought him in? How does it say that in the New Testament? Jesus. Now we know it's Joshua. Same name, different spelling, different language. So if the New Bible puts, if a Bible puts Joshua there, they're dishonest in translating. They're dishonest by selling a book that's not King James. Okay, so that's one I look at. Another one is Hebrews 4:8. You'll see it is the same concept, the same idea, Hebrews 4:8. Years ago, John R. Rice published a Rice Reference Bible. He put King James in the title page. He changed Acts 7:45 to Joshua. He was dishonest about that. And he did not change Hebrews 4:8. He was inconsistent. If you're going to change one, you should change them both. Okay, Hebrews 4:8. For if Jesus had given them rest, this would be the rest of Canaan, then would he not afterward have spoken of another day? So again, that was Joshua. So Joshua is the one that brings them into the land of Canaan, which is considered a rest in type. The land of Canaan is a picture of the millennium. Hebrews is offering a rest to the Hebrews of the last days. And he's telling them, do not provoke God like you did in the wilderness. Believe in the Messiah, and you will go into the millennial rest. So that's what Hebrews doctrinally is addressed to, the Hebrews. I mean, that's what it says. Okay, so that's you got those two bases covered. Okay, back in Joshua, it's the first book in the Bible named after a man. And Joshua, you got six letters. And so Joshua with the six is man's number. And you put a man 6 feet down. And in Romans 6:6, a man dies, and so forth and so on. You can run through a lot of these things. His name means Jehovah is salvation. Okay, the J in the front, J-E for Jesus, Jehovah, okay, is salvation. And what Moses and the law could not do, Joshua did. So Joshua, Moses lived 120 years old. His eyes were not dim. He would be the standard of age in Bible after the flood if a person has all the criteria available to them. And so what he couldn't do, Joshua did. And in John 1:17, it says, grace, for the law came by Moses, but grace and truth came by Jesus Christ. So that's what Joshua is portraying. When we read through Joshua, we're going to see some types of the second coming. Perfect example is in Joshua 10. They were fighting these giants, and God helped them out. He sent hailstones down from heaven. See, so if heaven, the third heaven, is millions and millions of miles away, he had to send those about Genesis 1 by the time they got there in Joshua 10, or it's closer than we think it is. And he's killing those giants, and they're on the run. And then he said, sun, stand still. Of course, we know he meant the earth to stop spinning and would have killed everybody on the planet. So he meant what he said, sun, stand still. And that's a picture of the second coming. Because in the tribulation, the giants will be destroyed by the hailstones that are the size of a basketball. Okay, and it's coming through that way. It's all going to come through again. So we'll do that in Joshua 10. Okay, and so the law is our schoolmaster who brings us to Christ. So the law, the first five books in the Bible, brings us to Joshua. Okay, so, I mean, the pictures in the Bible are just fascinating. Okay, and so the sixth book of the Bible establishes the number six to be man's number. So numbers have meanings in the Bible, and some of them are pretty easy to figure out. Some are more difficult. Okay, so the number three is a picture of completeness or the Godhead, and you can run that all through life. You can find threes everywhere. Okay, the number seven is a number for perfectness. You'll find that all through Revelation. The piano has seven notes, whole notes, and the eighth is the next octave. You got seven holes in your head. So forth, so on. And so seven is pretty prominent, pretty well known to be the number for perfection. 12 is usually the number for Israel. 13 is usually a bad luck number. Okay, it's usually Judas Iscariot. He was one of the 12. 1 plus 12 is 13. Okay, and you'll find that all through the Bible. The Bible is a mathematical book in many ways, but the devil also works in the same way. The Lord's number was 33, but the Masons like that number. They got a counterfeit. The United Nations has a flat map or a circular map with 33 sections in it. So the devil's going to counterfeit things of God. So six is a number for man. Okay, in Revelation 13, verse 18, 18 is three sixes. We find the number 666. It's found in Ezra 2:13. It's found in 2 Chronicles 9:13. So we got the 2:13s there, all with the number 6. And we can go on and on and that. It's my understanding the sixth day is when the embryo attaches itself to mama. Okay, that's the way I understand it as far as that goes. In Genesis 6:6 is when God was tired of the earth. He's going to destroy them for their violence. And then in Romans 6:6 is man's hope from death and is found in Jesus Christ. Usually six men carry a coffin before he's buried 6 feet down. And so you'll find a lot of these. And, of course, you can take numbers to, you know, an extreme. You know, you can take things overly as things can be done. But Joshua is the very first person to be told to pattern his life after a book. He's the first person to be told that. Joshua 1 verse 8. You want to look at that? Joshua 1 8. This book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth, but thou shalt meditate therein day and night, that thou mayest observe to do according to all that is written therein, for then thou shalt make thy way prosperous, and then thou shalt have good success. Now, the book of the law that he's talking about is Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. So that's the book that he had. And he might have been the one to finish chapter 34 of Deuteronomy, because that's when Moses died, unless God had Moses to write about his death before he died. And so then Moses is there, okay? And then when Moses was supposedly put in a sepulcher, then Michael came back down and got his body because the Lord wanted to use it in eternity. I don't know what he did with it, okay? But that's called the invasion of the body snatchers. And so Moses took that body, and the devil argued with about it, and Michael said, just the Lord rebuke you, and then left. And nobody could find the sepulcher of Moses. So Joshua 1, if you would, Deuteronomy 34, verse 9, Joshua the son of Nun was full of the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands upon him, and the children of Israel hearkened unto him and did as the Lord commanded Joshua, or Moses. So the Lord is going to, what he's going to do by the time we get to chapter 3, the Lord is going to take this spiritual magnifying glass, okay, between Joshua and the Israelites, and they're going to say, wow, I never saw Joshua like this before. Okay, because that's how they viewed Moses, because of all the miracles. And Joshua was just a tag along. You know, while Moses was up in the mount for 40 days and 40 nights, Joshua was halfway up the mountain. I don't know what he did for 40 days and 40 nights. And then when Moses came down, they said, man, it sounds like they got a party going on down there. And Joshua says, it sounds like music, but it sounds like war. And then they got down there, and they discovered that Sandy Patty and Amy Grant, I'm dating myself, and all the Christian contemporary guys were down there singing, and they're dancing to the music, and they took their earrings off their ears, and then it just magically became out a golden calf. Okay, and then 3,000 people died. 3,000 people died in Exodus 32, and 3,000 people got saved in Acts 2. Isn't that something? The Bible is a fascinating book. Just keeps coming around, going around, going around. So in Joshua 3, the Lord gave a miraculous sign, and that's when the people said, okay, Moses is done. We're going to follow Joshua, and he's going to take us into the land of Canaan. And so the Lord magnified him. That's what magnifying is. It's somebody appears bigger than they are. Okay, but the Lord does that, and that's what leadership does. It's not a force. It's not a brute thing. If you look at Moses, man, a guy that led 2 to 3 million people, you would think, man, that dude's got to be strong. That dude's got to be very boisterous. He's got to be, you know, like a bully. But when Moses wrote down Numbers 12:3, it says Moses was the meekest on earth. I can imagine he set the pen down and he said, are you serious? Yeah, I'm talking about you, Mo. And I'm not talking about Mo and Shemp and, you know, and Samuel and what was Curly's name? I forget Curly. Come on, what was Curly's Jewish name? Theodore, no? Now you're going to think about it. I'm going to think about it. I know Shemp was Samuel, Moses, Curly, Jerome. It was Jerome, the heroes of the faith. Okay, and so got to get them guys right. Okay, so that's Joshua. Okay, let's see. Spiritually, it gives principles of a victorious Christian life. So we look at it spiritually. If you look at it doctrinally, you got to look at it from a Jewish mindset. We got to look at the Bible from an Eastern mindset. Okay, we Westerners, we try to interpret the Bible from a Western mindset. The Bible's set in the Middle East. It's an Eastern mindset. We don't get that. And so we got to read it from an Eastern mindset. Now, you and I can get some spiritual application. And at the beginning of Joshua, you'll see that God did most of the work, but then God starts backing off. He takes the training wheels off the bicycle. And then he lets the bike go, and then he wants Joshua and those people to start running their lives. And that gives rise to a common saying, God helps those that help themselves. Now, it's not a scriptural statement. It's got a variation in there, but there is something to that. There's something to that. Okay, so that's laying a little foundation for Joshua in doctrine. In doctrine, Joshua portrays the second coming. That's the greatest doctrine of the Bible. Under Judaism, that would be a religious application. When we understand Judaism, Not modern Judaism. That's a tainted one. Even the Judaism of Jesus' day was tainted, where the rabbis added a bunch of other traditions and stuff like that. When you read, when Jesus would say, "Ye have heard it said, but I say unto you," he was saying, "Ye have heard it said," that means from the rabbis. "But I say unto you what the scriptures say." Okay, so man often put these other regulations on people. And so Jesus is saying, okay, this is what, we're going to get back to the scriptures. And people do still do that today. Baptists do that. Charismatics do that. I mean, yeah, that's still done in any culture. People want to add additional ideas to show how self-righteous they are. Okay, we'll start off as what we normally do is read the Bible. We go verse by verse. It's kind of a unique thing where they don't do that in schools usually. They give the kids pictures of bananas rather than eating the banana. And so we're going to read the words and put, you know, where you got a string across, and then you put some mortar down and you lay a brick down, and then, you know, you take off the mortar and then you lay the second one down, and you don't have cheerleaders saying, "Rah, rah, put that brick, put that brick." I mean, you just, out of character, you do it. That's how you learn the Bible. Line upon line, here a little, there a little, precept on precept, slow, meticulous, very precise. You ever hear people say, getting deep into the Word? Getting deeper into the Word. There's nothing about getting deeper in the Word. Nothing to that. It is getting more precise with our wording. That's different. Where Jesus said, "Man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word." Was he serious? Every word. And that's where we want to get very precise. Okay, and anybody knows that if you're not precise with your email address, your sincerity is not going to work. Got to be precise. Joshua 1, verse 1. "Now after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spake unto Joshua, the son of Nun." Poor guy, didn't have any parents. The son of Nun, unless he was a Catholic. Oh, we can go on a different route here on them nunneries. Yeah, read Maria the Monk story. A closed order nun in Canada. Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' minister. So he was a minister, a servant to Moses. He was the second man there to Moses. And then there were 70 others. So he served Moses for how long? The whole 40 years, I'm not sure. Well, the 40 years, definitely. When did he come along the way? I'm not sure. Maybe on Mount Sinai, somewhere in there. And saying, okay, notice the Lord's real comforting way of encouraging him. "Moses, my servant, is dead." There you go, Joshua. Face it. He's gone. He's gone. He's dead. Now you're it. I want to use you like I used Moses. And he's probably like, "Oh, brother. You sure went down the ladder." He says, "Now therefore arise, go over this Jordan," the Jordan River. "Thou," singular pronoun, see how precise the Bible is. "Thou," you, Joshua, the "you" is plural pronoun. "But thou and all this people unto the land which I give to them." So we're talking about 2 to 3 million. These people in the last 40 years had over 600,000 funerals. The only rich ones in the community were the morticians. Okay, 600,000 funerals in 40 years. Why? Because they didn't want to go into the land of Canaan. So, and then all of them are, you know, 40 and down, except for Moses, Joshua, and Caleb. So they're going in. "Go over this Jordan. Thou," Jordan River, comes from the north of Israel. It comes into the Sea of Galilee, then it flows from the Sea of Galilee right down to the Dead Sea. The Dead Sea is the lowest place below sea level, okay, on earth, and everything flows into it. Nothing flows out of it, okay, and on the southern part of the Dead Sea is where Sodom was. A little further south was Zoar. A little further north on the west shoreline was Gomorrah. I've been there. And a little further up is Admah and Bozrah. I've been by Sodom, but walked in Gomorrah, the ashes, and I have sulfur stones, little sulfur stones in my my desk. And if you lay a match to it, it turns blue like a cutting torch. And that's how he torched Gomorrah. Now, people don't see it today. It's at the foot of Masada. People usually visit Masada, but they don't visit this wilderness, rocky ashes. They don't usually go there. Jan, did you go there on the trip? Did you go to Gomorrah? Did you go to Masada? And then as you head south to the right, so your bus pulled into Gomorrah? Okay. Did you get any sulfur? Yeah, once you, it takes a while to find it, to notice it, because it's bedded in the ash. But once you know what you look for, oh, then you can say, oh, okay, and then you kind of see a little, and then you dig down and you find some ashes, or the sulfur. So, but you can see from the ashes that there was intelligence there, because things will be perpendicular where a building was there. Okay, and so that's Gomorrah, and then on the southern part, the Dead Sea is, and the reason why the Dead Sea is probably salty is because the fire and brimstone and salt come down. And if you can't swim, you need to go to the Dead Sea, because you can't drown. You float, you bob like a bobber. Okay, where Brent showed it when he was there, he had all four, his two hands and feet up in the air, he's just bobbing. Okay, and so it's more salty, it has more salt than Salt Lake City, the Salt Lake. So it's a great place to learn how to swim, but you need to get a shower right after that. Okay, so then he said, verse 3, he said, every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that have I given unto you, as I said unto Moses. So, okay, rightly dividing the word of truth. You read that verse to say, oh, the Bible says every place where I put the sole of my feet, then it's going to be mine. Give it a try. See how it works. You might quickly learn how to rightly divide the word of truth. Okay, and then he says, from the wilderness, okay, that would be south, Saudi Arabia, and this Lebanon, that's way up north, even under the great river, the river Euphrates, that's way over there. Why is it the Bible maps don't do that? The Bible maps do not include this entire land grant. What are they afraid of? They're afraid of the Muslims. Because it's all Muslim territory. That Euphrates is way over there. That covers Iran all the way over there. But you go to the Christian bookstores and look at the maps, and you won't see the Abrahamic land grant in them. You won't see what David got in there. You won't see that. And so that's a problem that they have. And all the land of the Hittites, those are some giants. And under the Great Sea, that's Mediterranean, toward the going down of the sun shall be your coast. So the shoreline there. Okay, so all that's Israel's. And up until 1960, the word Palestinian meant Jew. And then in the 1960s, that was changed in the 1960s. And so, those people are trespassing. And that's if you go with the land grant and everything. So verse 5, there shall not be any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. So that's quite a promise. Now, any man, he is not only referring to flesh and blood men, he is referring to giants also. Because there were many giants. One dude, Deuteronomy 32, said his bedstead was 9 cubits. Which turns out to be about 14 feet, 9 cubits, 13 and a half feet. That's king-size bed for a king-size man. Okay, and then like Goliath, he had six fingers on each hand. So, which saved Goliath a lot of heartache because he couldn't give the middle finger when he's out in traffic. So, saved a lot of heartache there, a lot of fights and all that stuff. Had to do two middle fingers. I mean, how do you do that? Okay, so that see, you can't pick on Goliath too bad. He never gave bad sign language, the poor guy. And so, oh well. And the poor guy brought a knife to a gunfight because David had a gun. He was able to project a small projectile from a distance. He just didn't have a tube and a firing pin. And he hit the guy right between the eyeballs. And so then he used his own sword to take him out. So that, yeah, that's something. Giants, are they still around? Yeah, I do believe so. If you want to believe Steve Quayle, and if you want to believe the testimony of some soldiers where they killed this giant in Afghanistan, about, what did they say, a 12-footer, I think? And it brought it back to the States, and, you know, things stunk to high heaven. Hadn't taken a bath for years. But, yeah, that's a story about Afghanistan. I don't know, you know, you can believe the story or not. You get online, look at Steve Quayle. He kind of specializes in that. And I'd rather him specialize it than me. And so, yeah, they're still around. In Connecticut, there's a state park called the Sleeping Giant. And that looks like a giant fell down there and died. And legend has it that Indians killed off some giants. And legend has it also that giants lived much up in Montana area. If you go back in there. So these things have been around. They're still around. Smithsonian's trying to cover all this up. Indiana has a bunch of giant mounds. And why do they try to cover this up? Two reasons. Verifies the Bible and exposes Satan. And he's got to cover all that up. Okay, and so it takes us all back to Genesis 6. Everything's going over. We learn from history that men don't learn from history. And so he promised Joshua, "There shall not any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. As I was with Moses," and so he just recounted his 40 years with Moses, "so I will be with thee. I will not fail thee nor forsake thee." Boy, isn't that a great promise? Guess what? We born-again believers have the same promise. Okay, now Joshua's was conditional. Ours is not. The Spirit of God has promised to indwell us forever. Boy, that's a great promise. Okay, then he says, "Be strong and of a good courage." Okay, the spoken word has more influence than we know. Be strong and of a good courage. In Daniel chapter 10, Daniel was praying about something. He was fasting for 21 days. It doesn't mean he was without food because he said no pleasant bread. So it was a type of a fast, praying for 21 days. And by the time the angel came to give him the answer, when the angel showed up, gave him the answer, he passed out. I mean, any of us would pass out if an angel shows up, if you know what it is. And then the angel said to him, "Be strong, I say unto you, be strong." And Daniel got strength. So our spoken word, you know what words are? Words have wings, and those wings are spirits. I don't say they force a person, but I do say they influence a person. So our words, our spoken words, especially parents to children, gets into their spirit. And so Mike Pearl has a wonderful book called Strong in Spirit for parents to help your children to be strong in their spirit, be confident. And he's got a wonderful book on that, Mike Pearl does. And Mike's got a bunch of wonderful books. But the poor Baptists are missing out because he doesn't put Baptist on his church door. So they're lost. I'm going to read Mike's stuff. I really appreciate him. We've had him here twice. First time I, you know, when I first got him, pick him up at the airport, I'd never seen him before. When he and Debbie came out of the airport. He had his beard down here. I said, oh, that's got to be him, Tennessee. And his beard was down here. And he said, I trimmed my beard because I was going to a Baptist church. I said, what'd you do that for? You trimmed it. Was it down here? And it's so funny. One of these fundies kind of smarted off to him, and he said something like, what's with the beard? And he goes, well, I don't know. It was puberty. It just started happening after puberty. I mean, he was great. Man, I really appreciate him, Mike Pearl. Okay, so he said to Joshua, be strong and of a good courage. He said it again in verse 7. He said it again in verse 9. You ever see professional athletes? I've got a guy who walks up to the baseball, to the plate. He's mumbling some words. Sometimes some of them are singing a tune. They sing a little, a couple of them, I know they'd sing a tune because the music relaxes them. And so you speak to yourself. And so the spoken word has effect on us. Okay, and so this is why we want to do this. Yeah, people say, well, you're crazy, you're talking to yourself. Well, if you want to be filled with the Spirit of God, it says speaking to yourself in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. Now, you're crazy when you answer yourself. But to speak to yourself, that's acceptable. You see, unclean spirits can't read your mind. So when you whisper something, they got ears like dogs because a dog is like a false prophet in the Bible, and they can hear that whistle or that very silent words and be affected. So he says, Joshua 1, be strong and of a good courage, for unto this people shalt thou divide an inheritance, the land. He does that later on in the book. There's an inheritance, which I swear unto your fathers to give them, fathers Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Only be thou strong and very courageous, that thou mayest observe to do according to all the law. They mess up in chapter 9. They mess up with that. Okay, which Moses, my servant, commanded thee, turn not from it to the right hand or the left, that thou mayest prosper whithersoever thou goest. Then here's the rule. This book, right here, this book of the law, shall not depart out of thy mouth, but thou shalt meditate, think over and over and over and over and over, think about it, meditate, day and night, when you're out there on a night watch. When David was out there watching the sheep, do you know what he's doing? He was meditating, considering the heavens, he considered the heavens. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. He's considering that. He's thinking about that. Meditate therein day and night, that thou mayest observe to do all, do according to all that is written therein. For then thou shalt make thy way prosperous, and then thou shalt have good success. And of course, in our day, good success is a spiritual success. It may or may not manifest itself materially. In fact, the best Christian ever lived, the Apostle Paul, died a pauper. Okay, and so the health and wealth dudes on TV are getting rich because they have a bunch of people who don't read their Bible. And they're shelling money out to them when they shouldn't be giving them a wooden nickel. But that's how it goes. And then verse 10, and verse 10 is a paragraph mark, so verse 9, have not I commanded thee, be strong and of a good courage, be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed, for the Lord thy God is with thee whithersoever thou goest. So when you get on this battlefield and you see them big giants, don't remember the Red Sea crossing. Don't remember what I did in Egypt. Don't forget that. Don't forget those things. Don't forget I am God and all these things are below me. And I promise you that they will not stand before you, and all you got to do is do what I tell you to do. Okay. Okay, so that's verse 9. 10 is a paragraph mark. We'll stop there. Any questions or comments are we covered? Oh, I'm fired. 2 minutes over. Stand up, speak up, shut up. That's the outline. Okay, prayer request you might have.